It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, science fiction. Later on, X-1 from 1957. But first, the Family Theater. Known mostly in its 400-plus broadcasts for drama, that goes part and parcel with any great sci-fi story, and we hear one next called UFO, written by the director John T. Kelly and hosted by Gail Storm, from October 13, 1954, on Mutual.
Family Theater presents Gail Storm and John Howard. From Hollywood, the Mutual Broadcasting System, in cooperation with Family Theater, presents UFO, starring John Howard. And now, here is your hostess, Gail Storm.
Thank you, Tony Lafrano. Family Theater's only purpose is to bring to everyone's attention a practice that must become an important part of our lives if we are to win peace for ourselves, peace for our families, and peace for the world. Family Theater urges you to pray.
Now to our transcribed drama, UFO, starring John Howard as Bill Cullen.
The following story is pure fiction. It poses a challenge that neither we nor our children may ever have to face. But if we should, if the make-believe problem in tonight's drama were actually forced upon us in the next 5 or 10 or 20 years, it's no exaggeration to say that the way in which we meet it may determine the fate of the world. The initials UFO are the official United States Air Force abbreviation for the word Unidentified Flying Object.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, can I have your attention, please? We're running a little behind schedule, gentlemen. Can I have your attention, please? Each of you was privately notified by your various governments early last week that you might be asked to leave New York and possibly this country on a moment's notice. Is there anyone present who was not so notified? Very well. In a few minutes, at 2100 hours to be exact, you will board one of 3 transport planes now waiting on the runways. Your destination, top secret. Now, each of you is an expert of one sort or another, a diplomat, a linguist, a scientist. And each of you may be called upon to exert his talents to the utmost before this mission is completed. You'll receive a complete briefing en route to the rendezvous point.
Rendezvous point?
Yes, Mr. Cullen. We here are permitted to tell you 2 things. The general nature and area of the rendezvous point, an uncharted island somewhere in the Pacific.
Well, who is it we're to rendezvous with? Can't you tell us that?
We would if we could, but we've been able to communicate with them only in a tentative and very unsatisfactory way. And we aren't even certain they'll keep the rendezvous, although, of course, we have high hopes.
Who are they, a bunch of cannibals?
We hope not. It would make your task almost insuperable.
All right, you can't tell us who they are, but what's the other thing you can tell us?
Where they're from. And I should emphasize that while our intelligence on this point is incomplete, we have no doubt of its basic authenticity.
Well, that's something, anyhow.
I hope you continue to think so. The representatives that your various governments have selected you to make contact with on the Pacific Islands are from outer space.
Oh, Cullen.
Oh, Roger, Dr. Passy.
Well, I see you have company.
Mr. Rubikoff, you know the doctor.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes,
and this is Mr. Clement Rogers.
Rogers, how do you do?
Mr. Peter Rubikoff of the Soviet Union.
Glad to know you.
We've got all the data on these mimeograph forms. Now, Rubikoff and I'll brief you from here on.
Rubikoff and you? Well, we are the team chief.
Yes. Sit down, Rogers, and I'll explain the whole thing. They're breaking the contact group into teams of 5 and 6 men. 14 teams all sold.
You mean each team will operate separately in trying to meet these visitors?
Well, not unless it becomes absolutely necessary. But apparently they want to have the organization fluid enough for that, just in case.
Well, did they give you any orientation, any background on this? Or do we just have to go in feet first?
Yes, they gave us a good deal. Oh, Rubikoff, do you have that report?
Oh, I think I do. Yes, here.
Now, this is a duplicate of a secret report submitted to the Security Council about a month ago.
Yeah?
Well, with your permission, I will summarize the salient points.
Fire away.
Well, you can both read the thing later if you want to.
No, go ahead, Mr. Rubikoff.
Well, this report traces, very briefly, of course, the history of reported sightings of unidentified flying objects all over the world since 1944. Now, during many of these sightings, especially in the United States, the flying objects were picked up on radar.
Yeah, you remember how that stuff used to make the papers all the time, and then they just stopped printing it.
Yeah. And the reason that they stopped was because it had become impossible to dismiss the sightings as, perhaps hallucinations or light reflections.
Yes. That's why the air intelligence people decided to use a combination of radio and radar as a method of primary contact with the unidentified object.
What do you mean, that's why? Had they come to some conclusion about the sources?
I'm sorry.
No, not at all. You go ahead.
You see, Rogers, one night a few years ago, a traffic control group in Washington was tracking what looked like a saucer flight over the Capitol. An airline pilot coming in sighted the saucers and called the field. They gave him a fix from the blips they were getting on radar. The minute traffic control radioed the position of the saucers to the airline pilot, the whole formation he'd been watching, about six pairs of orange and green lights, took off and were out of sight in less than 5 seconds.
You mean the saucer somehow heard the radio message and understood it?
Yes.
Exactly so.
Yeah. Well, do they transmit any signals of their own?
Well, apparently not. Or at least they haven't sent out anything we can receive. Of course, there's a good chance that those particular saucers were just ranging devices.
You mean with no humans inside them?
Yes, exactly. Remote control or something like that. But the point made here in the evaluation is that whoever does control them, from however far off, realizes we picked them up on radar.
Yes, and also, excuse me.
Sure.
And this is the key to the entire contact apparatus that we are to use. They have given us ample evidence that our radio signals are reaching them.
That's how the rendezvous point was chosen.
You mean the saucers helped select the site?
That is our understanding. But how?
Well, we were told that there's a radar team on each of these three jetliners. And as soon as we get out over the Pacific, they're going to give us a demonstration. This team has been selected to participate.
A demonstration of what?
Well, what Rubikoff said a minute ago about whoever it is that controls the saucers.
But what is it that the demonstration purports to prove?
Simply that they know that we know they're watching us.
Gentlemen, may I have your attention? We've darkened the compartment so that all of you can get a clear view of the radar scope to my left. Since we left Washington 8 hours ago, we've been in direct touch by radio telephone with four radar monitoring stations around the world. One in Liverpool, one in Marseille, one in New York, one in Moscow. And now will the members of the Orange Team go to the bank of telephones along the left wall of the cabin?
Well, that's us.
What are we supposed to do?
We'll just get on the wire, I suppose.
You will find that the phones are numbered from 1 to 4. Dr. Fussy, will you pick up phone number 1? Say hello and identify yourself, please.
Of course. Hello? This is Dr. Jules Fussy. What? Je suis Dr. Jules Fussy. Qui? À Marseille. Oui, très bien. I am in contact with the station of Marseille. They say they are ready.
Very well, Doctor. In a moment, I'll ask you to say to your countrymen, you may begin to transmit the radio signal. During the time of the signal's transmission, which will be amplified over this speaker so that all of us can hear it in the cabin, I would ask everyone to keep his eyes on the radar scope up front here. You ready, Doctor?
Ready.
All right. Tell your man to start transmitting.
Hello? Come on, say, transmit the signal to the radio.
Now watch. The radio operator in Marseille will send out 10 separate and distinct signals. Then he'll stop. A few seconds after he's finished, a series of blips should appear on the radar screen. I want you all to count them.
Look at it.
There they are, in the upper right-hand quadrant.
Yes, but what's making the blips?
I think you'll find there are two, four, 9, yes, 10. 10 blips. Exactly the same as the number of radio signals that were sent out by the operator.
But what are they?
Well, before we tell you that, Doctor, would you be good enough to inquire of the operator in Marseille if they've picked up any blips on their radar? And if so, how many?
Of course. Sur le radar, vous voyez, sont-ils des signaux? Combien? Merci. Yes, the same number, 10.
Thank you. You can hang up now, Doctor.
Au revoir, monsieur bien.
Oh, Major, would you be good enough to tell us what those blips represent?
Well, they're a flight of saucers, one for each blip. Using measurements taken on the scope, we estimate their distance from us to be about 60 miles.
Well, what was the operator over in Marseille, is he?
Another flight of exactly the same size. The Marseille call number is 10.
But the blips that we are seeing now, does that mean that they too are picking up the radio transmission from Marseille?
Either that or it's been relayed to them by another saucer flight over that area. Right now, for example, although the Moscow call number is 8, there will be 10 blips on the radar scope in Moscow. The saucer's way of telling us they know Marseille is the only station now transmitting to them.
Well, then they must know that our three jetliners are part of the picture, too. Otherwise, why the blips from just 60 miles away?
We expected this. They seem to know everything.
They're not changing.
Hey, look. On their radar scope. Some of the blips are moving off.
Five, six, seven. There's only three left.
What do you make of it?
Just a minute, please. Hello? Yes, yes, go ahead. Huh? From all four points. Well, hold on a moment.
What is it, Major?
Each of the four monitoring stations report that the number of blips they're tracking has dropped to 3.
Same as us.
Just a second. No? Well, we're still getting them on our scope. 3, about 60 miles off. All right, we'll let you know if anything happens.
What's up?
They've dropped off the other four scopes completely. We're the only one picking up any saucer blips at all.
Major?
Yes, Mr. Cullen?
I've got a hunch what it might mean. It's just a guess.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, you told us earlier that although the saucers had helped to select the rendezvous point using the numbered code, you still weren't sure they'd show up.
That's right.
Well, could it be they might want to change it at the last minute to make sure we don't pull a fast one?
I suppose it's possible. What's your idea?
Well, our party's made up of three jetliners, and they're showing up three blips on this radar scope.
That's right.
Maybe they're trying to tell us to follow them.
We'll be on the ground in a few moments, gentlemen. Land, go to your staterooms and gather up your gear.
You were right about the other planes, Bill. One of the radar jets told me they turned back.
Oh, here we go. We're coming in.
Yeah, it's starting to get gray in the east.
Almost morning.
Look, on the scope.
What?
The last blip we were following. It's gone.
Maybe the saucers aren't willing to make a daylight appearance.
But it is at their insistence that we are landing here.
Well, I guess the only thing to do is to make ourselves comfortable on this island until nightfall. Leave the next move up to them.
Oh, Bill.
Yes?
What time do you have?
Oh, a few minutes till midnight.
How far do you think we have walked?
Oh, perhaps 5 miles.
Collins.
Yes.
Contact the base again. Obviously, we have lost our bearings.
We're still going due north by my compass.
Will you be kind enough to contact the base? We should have seen them by now.
All right. Well, Rogers, can I have the walkie-talkie?
Here you are.
Thanks. Orange leader to contact base. Orange leader to contact base.
Contact base to orange leader. Go ahead.
We've been moving due north for almost 3 hours now.
Sorry.
Haven't seen a thing.
What's your position?
We're still in the brush. Anything from the two other teams?
We called them back to the base.
How come?
4 blip messages from the saucers. Apparently, they want to make personal contact with the smallest group available. That's you fellas.
Well, we haven't seen a thing. No lights, nothing.
Can you see the Kyobe Ridge from where you are?
Yes, just a few hundred yards ahead of us.
The west end of it's almost a plateau. A saucer could put down there if it wanted to.
All right, we'll try it.
Good luck. get there, give us a call. Major Reeves out.
So, the others they sent back.
Yes?
Then we are to be the guinea pigs.
I don't believe I have ever felt so helpless in my life.
Any special instructions?
No, I guess the original ones still stand. No hostility. Do everything possible to convince them of our friendly intentions.
Friendly intentions?
What's troubling you, Rubikoff?
Well, they will take that as a sign of weakness.
Let us be realistic, Mr. Rubikoff. Our sole hope of survival is that their intentions are friendly.
Oh, nonsense.
You honestly think that the Soviet Air Force, or any Air Force for that matter, would last 10 minutes against the saucers in a shooting war?
Yeah, but it might not come to a shooting war if we can scare them off.
I've got a feeling they won't scare very easily.
Well, we should at least try. Gentlemen, the alternative is abject surrender.
Why can't you people understand that peaceful relationships don't have anything to do with winning or losing?
Why don't you understand that the threat of power is the key to peace?
All right, Rubikoff, I have it. As soon as they land, you go up to them and say, boom.
you laugh. We have conquered half of your world while you are laughing.
Yes, but you never conquered the laughter. I should think you would have found a lesson in that.
Sentimental rubbish.
All right, Rubikoff, knock it off, will you?
What?
This isn't a press conference. We've got work to do. Let's go.
Well, this seems to be it.
That's about the highest point on the ridge, all right.
I can see nothing in the nature of a plateau.
Reeves said it was near the west end.
It seems to be about the center.
Yeah. Let's take a look down that way.
Listen. What?
I hear it.
Can you see anything?
No, but it doesn't sound far off.
It seems to be the plateau just up ahead.
But where's the noise coming
from? I see it. Coming in over the edge of the cliff. Look, look.
Yes. It's a saucer, all right.
They don't know that we are so close.
I wouldn't bank on that.
It seems to be stopping. Over it there.
Look. Along the edge. They've turned on a light.
Maybe we're supposed to signal them.
They're blinking. Once, twice, three, four, five.
Why don't they land?
Well, they probably want to make sure we're here. Let me take your flashlight, Rogers.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see what this does. One, two, three, four, five.
Now they are stopping again.
One, two, three, four.
All right. We'll send that back to them, too.
I wonder if they are going to blink some more.
No, they're going to land.
By George, that's what they're doing.
Tell me, how large would you judge that ship to be?
Well, it's settling perhaps 100 yards away. I would estimate possibly 30 feet in diameter.
That would be my guess, too.
Well, there could not be many persons inside of it, then, huh?
Not more than 3 or 4, I would imagine. Comfortably, if they are comparable in size to us.
Wait a minute. It's come to a stop. It's on the ground.
What now? I don't see any doors or ports or...
I guess we just walk up to it with a big smile on our face and hope for the best.
No, we don't.
Rubikoff.
No, keep back. I'm warning you.
What have you got there?
You will see when it goes off.
Goes off?
Rubikoff, don't be a fool.
It's you who are the fool. No, keep back. Why do you suppose these beings, whoever they are, have come here, huh? What, to pay us a visit?
Rubikoff, listen to
me.
The
most probable reason, and you all know it, is that they are from some dying planet like Mars, which can no longer support human life, and they must find a new world to live on.
Well, what if they are? At least they're peaceful. They haven't tried to attack us, and they could have.
I suppose you would help them?
Why not, if it were possible?
Oh, that's very easy for you to say. You have more food than you can eat, more clothes than you can wear. What about my country and countries like China?
Well, don't blame us for the way you've botched that.
What?
You killed your people's incentive to improve themselves.
That's a lie.
Accept it, Rubikoff. Slaves won't work any harder than they have to.
You don't understand, any of you, but that doesn't matter. Now, get out of my way.
You are really going to use that apparatus to destroy the saucer.
And myself and all of you, if you don't keep back.
You poor fool.
No, I tell you, keep away, but...
You poor fool.
let go of me.
Doctor, look out.
He's pushing him over the
passage.
Stop! Oh, my.
Oh, terrible.
Look, the front part of the saucer is sliding open. Do you suppose they want us to come in?
I don't know what else it can mean. Listen, Rogers, I don't think both of us should go.
Oh, now, look
here. No, really. If it's a trap, then we're both wiped out.
You think they just might want some sort of sample man to size us up?
No. No, I don't really think they do, but since there's always a chance.
You've great faith, haven't you, Bill?
Well, I like to think I do. If these creatures have a heart and a mind, then... Well, then I know who created them, and that's encouraging.
What do you want me to do?
Here, you take the walkie-talkie and get in touch with the base.
Right now?
No, as soon as I start up toward the saucer. And Rogers.
Yes?
If it seems that it's going wrong, don't come running or anything like that. The base should get a full report, and if you get mixed up in this, they won't.
You're the boss.
Well, I better get moving.
So long, Rogers.
Good luck. Orange to contact base. Orange to contact base.
Contact base to Orange. Is that you, Cullen?
No, it's Rogers. Now listen closely. We're on the plateau. The saucer has landed. It's scarcely 100 yards from us. Cullen is approaching it alone. He's about halfway there now, flashing his torch as he goes. There are two lights along the leading edge of the saucer, and they've begun to blink again. A few moments ago, a section on the side of the saucer facing me slid open. I can't see the interior very well. It's dimly lighted, and there's no ramp leading up to the entryway. Cullen's going to have to climb up. It's just a foot or so. It's... Wait a minute. Someone or something has just appeared in the entryway. Cullen has seen it, too. He stops. He's less than, I should judge, 10 yards from the opening. In this light, I can't possibly be sure, but I think it's a man. He's standing in the entryway. He beckons to Cullen in what seems to be at least a friendly manner. Cullen has started to move forward again. Now he's reached the saucer. He stops, looks up at the being, and he extends what I'm sure is a human arm to assist Cullen through the opening. I may be a bit premature, Major, but they're both standing there looking one another over in what seems a very civilized fashion, and I think it's going to be all right.
The Family Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 13th, 1954, from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now the third and final story contributed by Fritz Lieber Jr. on X-1, called The Moon is Green, from January 2nd, 1957, on NBC.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3... 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science... Tonight, the time after the next atomic war, the place somewhere in the United States, the story, The Moon is Green by Fritz Leiber.
The moon was green, green as emeralds, green as leaves, green as grass. I reached my arms toward it and let it bathe me. I closed my eyes and let it kiss me.
Effie! Effie, where are you?
Oh, dear Lord, he mustn't see it. It's so beautiful, and he always kills beauty.
Effie!
In the bedroom, Hank! I've got to close the shutters before he comes. Mustn't. My head.
Effie! What the devil are you doing? Close those shutters, you fool! Come away from there. You're trying to destroy yourself and me, too. You know those shutters are not safe to open for another 5 years.
I only wanted to look at the moon.
The moon? Here, count yourself for radiation. You know what the Central Committee would do to you for breaking the lead shield?
Kill me? I wouldn't mind.
Don't talk like that.
Would it be so different from being shut up in a lead coffin the way we are now? Would it be worse than the eternal thud of the air conditioners and the radiation filters?
Be still and count yourself. Good Lord. We're past the danger zone. Oh, wait a minute. Did you take off your watch?
No.
Well, give it to me. You fool. You little fool. What am I going to do with you? Can't you understand what kind of a world you're living in? Can't you?
Oh, yes, husband. I can understand only too well. It's the world that can't seem to understand. The world that went on stockpiling hydrogen bombs. The world that started testing those bombs, telling itself it hadn't really exploded enough to make the air dangerous. And then began to throw them across continents, one nation against another. It lasted about 2 months. And after that, the fury of doomed men who thought only of taking with them as many of the enemy as possible. After the fury came the time of terror. Men and women with death sifting into their bones and through their nostrils, fighting for bare survival under a dust-hazed sky that played fantastic tricks with the light of the sun and the green light of the moon. The only chance for existence was to claim one of those underground radiation-shielded places. They went to the strong. And afterward, the waiting behind the lead shield. The endless, interminable waiting.
You understand, I suppose, that we were allowed to reclaim this ground-level apartment only because the committee believed us to be responsible people. And because I've been making a darn good showing lately.
Yes, Hank, I understand.
It's a privilege to have some privacy, you know. I could send you back to the basement tenements. Would you like that?
Oh, no. Anything rather than that fetid huddling and that shameless communal sprawl. It is really so much better. Being on the surface is meaningless. It only tantalizes. And yet...
Well?
No, Hank. I don't want to go back underneath.
Well, then try to behave yourself. Coming up through the tunnel just now, I decided I'd better talk to you. Frankly, Effie, the committee's beginning to be a little concerned about our lack of children.
Oh.
Charlie Baker asked me this morning if I'd like my name put on the list for a free woman.
You needn't bother.
What do you mean?
I mean, we're going to have a baby.
We... Effie, are you sure?
Yes,
Effie, that's wonderful. It's magnificent. Do you realize what this means to my rating with the committee? You know how important it is to the community to raise healthy members for the day when we can resume the surface war.
Yes, I've heard the broadcast.
We'll announce it at the meeting of the junior committee tonight.
Tonight?
Well, you hadn't forgotten about it, had you? It's the annual banquet. Now, you brighten yourself up and put on your best dress. I want the other juniors to see what a handsome wife the new member has got. What's the trouble now?
Well, I'm terribly sorry, Hank, but you'll have to go alone. I'm really not well.
There you go again. First the infantile, inexcusable business of opening the lead shutter, and now this. Don't you know what this could mean to my reputation, Effie?
Sorry.
You're coming, Effie. This is just neurotic pampering.
Hank, I'll just be sick and you wouldn't be proud of me at all.
Now listen, Effie. Tonight's too important. It'll cause a lot of bad comment if a new member's wife isn't present. Now, you know how just a hint of sickness starts all kinds of rumors about radiation disease. Now, what do you say?
No.
Effie, you're going. There's nothing wrong with you if I have
Hank.
To...
Hank! You're hurting my arm. It isn't good for the baby.
The baby? I'd almost forgotten. Oh, no, we have to be very careful. I suppose if I explain to them you aren't there because of the baby, it will make a difference.
I'll just stay here alone till you come back. When will you be back?
Well, those things usually go on pretty late. So if you're expecting company, you needn't worry.
Hank?
Yes, Effie?
Do you remember when we were first married?
Of course I remember.
You liked to go skiing, remember? You said it was like feeding a hunger for beauty being up on a mountain covered with snow.
What are you talking about?
You forgot.
I haven't forgotten. Just as much desire to get outside as you do, but I know there's no chance for me. I've got to see that my children and their children survive to see the sun again. We've got to behave like adults, to make sacrifices. We've got to keep the strain pure.
Hank, what do you suppose it's like for them?
For whom?
The freaks and the mutants. The outsiders.
What do you know about them?
I remember some of the pariahs. They were hairless, cringing creatures with radiation welts all over their bodies. They came begging to be taken in during the last months of the terror. The committee ordered them shot down. Like dogs.
We don't like to talk about that.
Hank, are they still out there?
Effie, this is the sort of talk that's just morbid.
Are they?
Yes. There are still humans out there. At least they were humans. They know better than to come near the shelters now.
Poor creatures.
I can't stand here discussing this nonsense all night. I have to get going. For the last time, are you sure you won't come down with me?
No. I'll wait.
Don't you get lonely?
No.
I was talking to Jim Barnes today. He told me he wasn't going to be able to make it to the banquet either. Touch of the old flu, he said. That isn't like him, is it? Effie, are you listening?
What?
You remember Jim Barnes, don't you? He used to be sweet on you. Said you had the soul of a poet.
Well, yes, I remember him. Why?
Never mind. Well, I guess I got a bit sharp with you. I'm sorry about that. I was excited about being made a junior and the baby and all. Selfish of me. I apologize. As you get to bed early, I'll probably go over to the men's dorm for a while after the meeting. You'll be completely alone for the next 4 hours. Do you mind?
What? Oh, but no. No.
Good night, Effie.
He looked at me strangely, and then his features returned to their usual harder, more calculating expression. possible that he had sensed my very dream? Had it been a dream? Oh, it must have been. It wasn't possible that it had really happened. Oh, it had just been an illusion, a silly projection out of my starved romantic imagination. I waited until Hank's footsteps vanished down in the tunnel. And then I waited until I heard it. No, it isn't possible. There's nothing out there. Nothing but deformed monsters. I mustn't open the shutters. Dear Lord, I've got to know. I've got to know.
I've got to. Bueno, so you haven't forgotten our meeting after all.
You.
And what are you expecting someone else?
It wasn't a dream. You really were out there last night.
Oh, yes, and the night before.
I was afraid I dreamed it. I still think it's a dream.
Lean out into the moonlight a moment.
Is this a dream?
Oh. Or was it a flesh and blood kiss?
And your name is Patrick.
Aye?
Patrick.
Well, now, did you open the window to find God's own breath, the fresh evening air, or did you open it to invite me in?
Of course. Come in. Come in.
Come, Joe Lewis. Ah, here, now let me help you. Being a cat with 12 toes on each foot and ears like boxing gloves is a bit cumbersome. I have to help him a bit, you see. Come on now, Larry.
There now. Is your husband about?
No. No, he won't be home for a while.
Well, still, I'd better close the door.
Oh, no. Leave them open.
The radiator?
I don't care. I want to see the moonlight.
Aye. Would you have a bit of food? Joe Lewis and I are starved for a bite to eat.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'll get it.
Oh, Effie.
Yes?
Oh, but you're a fair creature.
Thank you. His face wasn't horrible at all. Only thin and sensitive and terribly sad. And there were no radiation welts or scars on his skin. He looked just as he had looked that first night when I opened the lead shutter and saw him crouched at the window. And now I knew it had been no dream. He was an outsider, a pariah. He was my love. Here's some canned meat and a food pill, and I put on some water for coffee.
Ah, oh, bless your room. Come on now, Joe. Here's a bit of meat for your black soul to feed on. He's hungry, poor creature.
Well, then, sit down, girl, where I can look at you.
All right.
Have you missed me?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I've had some thoughts of you, I dare say.
Talk to me.
Of what?
Tell me again about outside, what it's like.
Again?
Again and again.
Well, now, outside... You say the coffee's heating?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, it is a wonderland for sure. More amazing than you and your entombed folk could ever imagine, a veritable fairyland.
Oh, tell me the truth about
the
it.
Truth? I am telling you the truth, my love.
But the bombs and the dust made only ugliness.
At first. But then they changed the life and the seed of them that were brave enough to stay. Wonders beyond wondering bloomed and walked. Well, have none of you been outside?
Well, the radiation teams go up into the ruined buildings once or twice a year to find canned food and batteries. They can only work for a few minutes at a time.
Ah, sure, those blind-souled slugs could never see anything but food and batteries anyway.
Oh, tell me what you see, beyond the city, I mean.
Ah, there are gardens there. Gardens where a dozen buds blossom for every one before. And the flowers have petals a yard across.
Oh.
And there are stingless bees as big as sparrows soaking their nectar.
But did the radiation make all the cats like this one?
Like this runt? Why, no, girl. They are grown spotted and huge as leopards. But they're gentle beasts, for the dust has burned all the murder out of every living thing.
Well, Hank says the dust kills.
Would you like to hear the poem I made?
Yes.
I'd say it. Fire can hurt me, or water, or the weight of earth. But by some curious coincidence, the dust is my friend.
Oh, more.
Well, then, there are robins like cockatoos and squirrels like a prince's ermine, all under a treasure chest of sun and moon and stars that the dust changes from ruby to emerald and sapphire. And there are... What is it, love? What's that look for?
There's one thing you've never told me about.
And what is that?
The children. The new children.
Ah, now the children.
The truth.
The truth?
Promise.
I swear on the skin of my cat here. The children, is it, huh? Well, now, if you'd ever catch a glimpse of one of them, you'd never doubt me again. They have long limbs and smiling, delicate faces and white teeth and the finest hair. They're so nimble that... Well, that even I, a sprightly man and somewhat enlivened by the dust, feel crippled beside them, and their thoughts dance like flames.
But what's wrong with them, Patrick?
Wrong? Nay, love, there's nothing wrong. Different, perhaps, and new, but not wrong.
Well, tell me, tell me.
Well, then, they do have 7 fingers on each hand and 8 toes on either foot. But they're much more beautiful for it. And they have large, beautiful ears that the sun shines through. So lovely and delicate to behold.
How do they behave? They're mine.
Not as you and I, perhaps. They play happily in the gardens all day long, laughing and finding joy in the simplest beauty.
Are they defective?
Well, now, by the standards out there... You're the defective one, shut up here all the while, hating and crawling in ugliness and feeling dirty. No, they're quite lovely. And they're quite perfect, the new children.
Oh, you're telling the truth. You're not making it up.
It is true, every word of it. Oh, I'll admit you have to look a bit hard to find these things I've been telling you. But find them you may. Do you believe me?
Oh, yes. Yes, I believe you. But I'm afraid.
Give me your hand.
Here.
Now listen to me. You must not be afraid to do as your heart tells you. That's why I'm here.
Either of you move.
Oh, Hank,
stay there, or I'll bless both of you.
Oh, Hank, but...
Carrying on like this, and not even with a man of the community, with an outcast, a pariah.
No,
oh, man, I know what you're thinking, but you're wrong. I just happened to be coming by hungry, a lonely tramp, and I knocked at the shutter, and your wife was a bit foolish and let her kind heart get the best of it.
You think you can tell me that?
Hank, please.
So you're going to have a child, my dear. My child?
Yes, your child.
I should pull this trigger right now. I should shoot him down in cold blood.
Man, you're mad. I never touched your wife.
You contaminated pariah. You're going to die. Don't you know that?
Hank. Hank, if you kill him, you kill the bringer of the best news we've ever had. Oh, Hank, put aside your jealousy for just a minute and listen to me. Patrick has something wonderful to tell us, all of us.
What do you mean?
I mean that we need no longer fear the dust. Oh, Hank, remember how it was with me. All the exposure I had, and yet there are no burns. Hank, those who were brave enough to stay outside have adapted. They'd become a beautiful people.
Did he tell you that?
Everything that grew or moved was purified.
He filled you with lies so he could take you.
No, it's true. The radioactivity is almost gone, burned out.
Effie, I've been out there. It's horrid.
No, no, no. You've been blinded. Blinded to beauty. Blinded to living.
Good Lord, you believe it.
It's true. It must be true. Look at Patrick. He's living proof. He's been outside for a year and there isn't a mark on him, not a scar. It's because he's brave. And the dust can't hurt the brave.
Well, you think that's it, huh? All right, Effie, I'm going to prove something to you. You, Patrick, take this radiation counter. Take it.
Very well.
Press the button and count yourself. Go on.
As you say.
Read it. Read it!
1,700.
Yeah, you hear that, Effie? 1,700 radioactives, enough to kill 1,000 men. He's like raw radium. If you turn out the light, he'll glow green in the dark. A week's exposure to him will destroy you.
What are you proving, Hank?
That he's a freak. A freak! Get away from him. He's destroying you right now.
May I shut this thing off now?
Patrick, is it true?
Yes, I'm afraid it is true.
Oh,
you do well to cringe, both of you. I'm living death. I'm death itself. As your husband so wisely said, I'm a freak. Just like the man who ate nails and walked on fire. Only my oddity is that for some unknown reason, the dust can't harm me. I'm the only one. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Not too close now. And examine the man who couldn't die. And now, if you don't mind, I'll go back to my dead world. And leave you to yours.
Wait. All of those beautiful things.
It gets so lonely out there. And I was starved for beauty. And so were you.
There's no garden out there.
Garden? Listen to me, the both of you. What is out there is more terrible than either of you can imagine.
You're worse than Hank, even. He only killed beauty once. But you brought it to life so you could kill it again. You're afraid. Afraid of the loneliness out there. Well, I'm not afraid.
Effie, keep away from the window.
No, I'm not afraid. Maybe there is no garden out there, and no beautiful, strange children to play happily. But there can be if we're brave enough.
Effie!
I'm going!
Effie, come back, Effie!
There's no use trying to keep her, man.
Effie, come back! I love you! Come back!
There's no use, man.
There's still time. She stood the dust better than most. There's still time. You... The dust won't hurt you. Find her. Bring her back. I'll reward you. I'll give you food.
If you want her, you'll have to go yourself.
She'll die.
Maybe she won't.
How can you say such a thing?
Because perhaps she's like me. Aye. Perhaps the two of us together could be the first of a race that'll live in sunlight again.
Get against the wall where I can kill you easier.
Why would you kill me? Is killing all the answer you have to life's riddles? Is the smell of blood better than compassion? Is it more joy to own her than to be loved by her?
Move!
Man, you'll not kill me. Shall I tell you why? Because my flesh will not die. I live 1,000 years.
Not your brain, Patrick. And that's where this gun is aimed.
Well, then you leave me no choice. You get
him! Hey, call him up! Put the arm! Go! Stop!
Well, then I have your weapon now. Out there, you see, we
freaks have learned to live together and to cooperate. It's the only way we can stay alive. Oh, I'll give Effie your love. Come on, Joe. Oh, you'd better close the shutters as soon as we're gone. The moon is beautiful, but it's deadly.
I was waiting for him at the end of the ruined street. When we looked back, we saw Hank closing the lead shutters on himself. We were alone in the world. Above us, the moon was green. I bent and picked up a handful of the dust and let it trickle through my fingers. And I remembered the words of Patrick's poem. Fire can hurt me, or water, or the weight of the earth. But by some strange coincidence, the dust is my friend.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 2nd of January, 1957 on NBC. And that closes out this hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in.